Hello and welcome back to another episode of And the Winner Is. No, it's not. That's a good start, isn't it? It's been so long since we've recorded. It's for the love of a franchise. So anybody that doesn't know, we do have another podcast called And the Winner Is, which is our Oscar podcast. You can see it's been so long since I've recorded that I've forgotten what I'm doing.
Well, that's all right, mate, because he's kind of because we do the other ones as well. It threw me that you were doing the intro then as well.
Yep, it is my turn to do the intro. I've just got it wrong. No, it is for the love of a franchise, and we're here to talk about the 1970 sequel to The Planet of the Apes, Beneath the Planet of the Apes. And we talked about the first one on the last show, so we're back to talk about the second film in my latest pick of franchises. And always, as you heard, Tony is joining me. You all right, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, yeah.
Just throwing you a curveball.
Well, it's been a weird one with this film. I watched it the first hour a week or so ago.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel very well, and I was nodding off, and I watched the last half hour this afternoon. So it's like,
do you know what? It's weird. I did the same thing the other week when I got COVID again.
Yeah.
I sat, my little one was playing PlayStation, and he was online with some of our friends, actually.
Yeah.
And I couldn't sit here. I was watching one of the films on the iPad, and I couldn't sit here because he was, even with my headphones in, I could hear him talking constantly. So I went upstairs to watch the rest of the film in bed.
Yeah.
And I got in bed and I didn't feel right. And I never do this. I was falling asleep.
Yeah.
While I was watching it, and then I found out a couple of days after. In fact, I think it was the next day that I'd got COVID. So yeah, it exactly the same thing happened to me, and it's very rare that I nod during a film. Sometimes I will do it in the cinema because of how dark and warm it gets in some of those cinemas. And especially if it's a night showing when you've done a day at work or you've been somewhere else, then occasionally I will find myself nodding in the cinema, but not when I'm at home. But that time I did. So you're not the only one, Tony. I did it as well.
So the final third of the film's still quite fresh.
Yeah, I only watched this Friday night. My little one was at Scout, so I watched it then while he was there. So it's quite fresh for me as well. Normally I'm kind of in advance, but this March has been an absolute mayhem of a month. Hardly been at home. Two weekends I was in London.
Yeah.
In a row. And then, well, or in and around London. And then next weekend I'm back down there Easter weekend. So it's been a bit of a hell of a month to fit these films in. So I've only just watched it as well. As I said, 1970 sequel, Beneath the Planet of the Apes. Let's jump straight in as we always do. I thought it was quite bold that they started with the end of the previous film. It's not something we see all the time.
It's quite bold at both ends, actually, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it is. And it's interesting because I wrote down, there's a lot of similarities in this film to Back to the Future. The bit at the start with the repeat of the previous film. I also noted down there was another bit, and I don't know what it was, and I actually wrote down, I wonder whether Bob Zemeckis or Bob Gale was a fan of this film. I know what it was. There was something to do with, that was it, the chasing the train bit, when they're chasing the horses instead.
Yeah,
it felt very much like the end of Back to the Future Part 3. There's definitely, they've picked some stuff up here, and I wonder which one of the Bobs it was that was a fan of this film. But I did, I really did feel like it was quite bold for them, but it has become quite a thing when you've got a sequel that you kind of put the end of the previous film. But back then, there wasn't many sequels.
And then I have to sort of set it up slightly differently. You can't have it crash in the water again, of course. So you see quite a brutal crash landing for the second one.
Yeah, it is. And the fact that he's left on his own pretty much straight away. I thought, this is just going to be a repeat of the first film. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's not. And it gets into the bulk of the story quite quickly. It gets out of the way.
Yeah, because we're quite lucky from an audience point of view, it's all been established, isn't it? So
yeah. It knocks it on the head quite quickly. And we waited quite a long time in that first film to see the apes. And it doesn't take that long in this one. And we'll get onto that in a minute when we first see those apes. And actually, on that note, I thought the fire effects in this were quite good right at the beginning. Mm. I was surprised for 1970s. It could have felt like some of those pop videos of the 70s when they used fire effects, and it was just flickering light. It was actually quite well put together in this one. We're talking about the scene when they kind of flash back, don't they, to Taylor and how they got split up after the end of the first film. And I thought that was quite good. And I was surprised at how little Charlton Heston is in this, considering he's still billed as the lead actor.
Yeah, well, he basically just bookends it, doesn't he? Because we see him again later on. But yeah, he's in that first section to set it up. And then, of course, he goes into the thing. And we do find out later on that was probably a bit of a mistake on his part.
very much so.
Through the invisible wall.
Yeah. I'm going to put it out there now. This is a very strange film.
It's a very different beast from the first one, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's the theme of the franchise as they go on, actually.
Yeah. It's incredibly strange. I did say that Charlton Heston likes a good earthquake. And we'll talk about that actually a bit later as well, because something relating to that film pops up later on. I'm sure it is the same thing, but we'll talk about it later on. I did find the lack of speech from her in this film feels really forced, and kind of the conversations that they tried to have. It feels like it's taken a step back, like they're treating her like a child again. Because by the end of the first film, it felt like she kind of understood what was going on. Whereas this just, it seems like that they're feeding words to a baby.
Mm.
Which was just really weird. It didn't fit with how we'd left her at the end of the first film.
Yeah, because when James Franciscus' character comes across her, we kind of have to go through the rigmarole again, don't we?
And it just feels very, very forced. I thought that was a little bit. It was quite painful at times.
Because she kind of serves as his character's shortcut to getting him up to speed as well, doesn't she? So
yeah,
like taking him towards the Ape City and him seeing from there, and of course him not making the same mistake of letting himself get into the Ape City. He's a very different character in that sense from Taylor, I think, as well.
Yeah, he is.
He's very no nonsense, isn't he? And he got a job to do.
Yeah,
and he said, "I'm staying around here. They're all talking apes, and I'm not staying around here."
Yeah, and even right from the word go, the fact that he knows what's happened to him, he pretty much goes, "I know I've traveled through time."
Yeah, yeah.
And knows that Taylor's there as well. He is very forthright in what he's doing.
I took it that his missions must have been quite a bit later, and they sort of had a chance to work out what had happened or something, or how the ship had disappeared. Because it's rather convenient otherwise, and he kind of works out quite quickly what happened, isn't it?
And then we get on to something I kind of talked about or signposted at the beginning. We get this early introduction to the apes. And while the main apes, again, are great, brilliant makeup, my God, the non-speaking apes look awful.
there was a lot of budget saving, wasn't there, then, on those?
Yeah, do you know what it reminds me of? I don't know whether you've ever seen it. You might have seen the alternate version, but Bruno Mars's Lazy Song, the video where he's dressed up as an ape, and it's a plastic mask, and it looks like that. That's how bad it... Well, I thought you might have seen the alternate one because he did an alternate version with Leonard Nimoy in. Which was, very good.
The frame of reference I was going to use was the gorilla from the end of Trading Places.
yes, you're not the wrong.
Gorilla suit.
Yeah. I will tell you that the suit on the Cadbury's drum playing gorilla is better than most of these.
But yeah, it was one of the things I did know that they obviously there's not a lot of budget for the extras, was there? So they're
no,
because they're all very kind of fixed. There's no expression in any of them.
None of them move. They're not breathing. They're not doing anything. It's just they just sit there. So I did say that he looked like he was going to get killed off quite quickly when he gets shot at the beginning. And you think, oh, is that how it's going to go down? That they're going to kill another one and Taylor's going to have to come back and put them in their place again.
And I think that whole sequence felt like some sort of weird contractual thing, because is it Azira, I think, her name, the ape? Because she's not in it for long at all. It's literally just that one sequence to fix him up. And of course, Roddy McDowell's not in this one. It's somebody else playing that part.
Yeah.
Because he comes back for the third one. But yeah, so her appearance, she just seemed very contractual.
Yeah, and what's annoying is they are the two most interesting characters
from the first film. Yeah.
So it's kind of sad that we don't see more of them. And the scene as she sends him off and kind of lets him loose is really sweet.
Yeah. But
it's also, again, that thing where in the first film it felt like there was some kind of connection between her and Taylor. And then it happens again with her and him in this. Like, she's got some attraction to human males.
Yeah.
She's kind of weird.
I think the fact that she come across another talking one is a bit of a real shock to her, isn't it? Oh, he's just like Taylor.
Yeah. Also, something I wasn't expecting was naked apes in the sauna.
Yeah, I've written down ape sauna, and that was a bit very... I do like how they have some of those human qualities in there. Yeah. Like that, those sort of human things.
Yeah, very, very much so. And we do get back to that stage of humans as pets in this film. They still haven't learned that we are stronger than they think we are, and they still continue to do what they were doing in the first one. But then the film changes. It has a couple of changes.
Yeah.
So then at one stage, it kind of becomes a war film.
Yeah. So you've got these two sort of parallel plots. It splits out into with him and Nova.
Yeah.
Making it into the beneath.
Yeah.
And then you've got the other subplot of the guerrillas wanting to going to lead their sort of invasion force.
Yeah.
Putting those plans together.
Yeah, and we talked about the gorillas kind of being a lower being in the first film. And I think that kind of comes through even more in this, that they're the ones that kind
later on that, boy, the gorillas are dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely does lead us to that consideration that they are the lower force on the planet of the apes.
It's so interesting that there's that one bit in the village where there's sort of the peace nicks, where you got like the peace protests, and that was hilarious. That's just completely crossed to the middle of Vietnam.
Yeah, it was such a sit-in that I looked at it and went, they really got placards protesting against them.
Yeah,
brilliant. What? And at this point, the human kind of elements to the ape life kind of come in, don't they? And we see some of the other, what's left over of the human elements at this point. And this is the point where I mentioned earlier, Charlton Heston's love of earthquakes. I believe this is the set that they built at Universal.
That, ah,
simulates the earthquake from the film that they filmed in when he discovers the train station underneath. I think it's just the same one.
Yeah, I did know. It actually looks really cool, that stuff, once they get down underneath. And so the old sort of bits of stone on the writing on the wall and the placards and the crashed bus.
Yeah, and the telephone.
Oh, how did the bus get down there?
Yeah.
Must have gone through a hole in the floor.
And see, that's the interesting element, which makes me think it is the same one. Because when you do that earthquake ride at Universal Studios Hollywood, a train crashes through the ceiling. Which I assume means that is the same one. I've not looked into it. I'm just guessing, but it does seem like it's a little bit of Hollywood history going on there. And then where do we get to? And that's, this is kind of what we talked about. We wanted to see the other factions of the apes. In the first one, because we only kind of got small glimpses of, as we say, the gorillas, the orangutans are kind of floating around the first film. But we don't get a massive picture. And this one kind of introduces more.
Equivalent of a priest at one point, don't we? We sort of shaking in a service and stuff like that. And a little bit of what we did have briefly in the first one, a similar thing, but there's more in this as well.
Yeah. And it definitely does feel like they're trying to hit some of the same notes as the first film, which obviously it was a massive hit. So why wouldn't they try and hit some of those notes?
Boy, does it take a turn.
At this point, it goes very, very strange. It then becomes a religious film.
Yes. Effectively, because we discover that there are mutants living underneath, and they're basically a cult.
Yeah.
It's a telepathic cult.
Yeah, very strange. Not anything that was hinted at in the first film at all.
But I do love the fact that when you watch them back together, the idea that they were there in the first film.
Yeah.
Observing, unseen, everything that was going on with Taylor.
Yeah. It becomes a very different film, both to the first one and kind of my expectations of an apes film. To be honest, I certainly wasn't expecting this to go like that. From the religious cult that are mutants that kind of peel their skin off and sing human songs in weird ways.
The All Bright and Beautiful, All Things Bright and Beautiful, it's really weird pace and it's completely out of tune.
Yeah, it's very, very strange.
The tempo is really weird.
Yeah. And not only that, we get like religious hallucinations.
Yeah.
There's
some really disturbing bits as well. And then when they use the telepathy on him to sort of try and kill Nova.
Yeah.
To try and strangle her. Wow, that's a bit dark.
Yeah, and then to force Taylor and him to fight each other.
In that pointy prison.
Yeah, and trying to kill him with, I'm guessing, deer antlers. It does tend to feel like Matt Reeves probably watched this film. This is probably what gave him his impetus on that new set of films that he started for Fox, with the war factions and things like that. There's definitely a feeling more of this film than probably the first film. In Matt Reeves' version, which is very interesting because that's continuing on without Matt Reeves, obviously, and it is now a Disney film. But it's very strange that you would take the Planet of the Apes, turn it into a new set of films and go, do you know what? I'm going to take more from beneath the Planet of the Apes than I am Planet of the Apes.
Well, there's a lot more sort of sci-fi ideas in the second one, really, isn't there? The first one is literally just that idea of the apes and roaming the planet. But this delves into some much more, like you say, different areas and much more sci-fi areas. I mean, that telepathy thing, I've seen a few things over the years, but none's quite as pronounced. And that first time they take their face off is quite cool, but also really freaky as well.
Yeah, it is. Again, a totally unexpected turn.
Yeah.
I just thought they're humans that have been stuck underground for all this time. Yeah.
But they've actually completely mutated, yeah.
Yeah.
Along with the powers, they've got a horrible skin.
And
great makeup. But again, some of that I noticed in with the same thing as with the apes. There's that scene where they're in the service. Some of the ones at the back of the pews have also got the kind of the fixed faces as well.
Yeah, and on that note, we just talked about the fight between the two humans. The dummy of the preacher when he's pinned up against the door before he collapses to the floor. It's a waxwork. It's not real. It just looks awful. And then for him to then fall on screen again with the makeup fully done and everything, it was a really weird transition.
It's a brutal demise, isn't it? Just jumping between the gate and the actual fence of the cell. Just completely shish kebabs the bloke.
Yeah. And then it takes another turn that they're worshipping a nuclear bomb.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because we've seen the bomb previously, but we didn't realise just how important it was to them, and they actually treated it. They basically like a cult to it. Yeah,
yeah.
And it's a weird sort of how all the art in it, all the talk about the fallout and all that stuff. It's so uncomfortable. So weird.
Yeah,
they're in awe that they basically treat it as a god.
Yeah, and at this, by the time I get to the end with the, as I say, the fight scene between the two humans, I'd forgotten that Charlton Heston had even been in it at the start.
Yeah,
it was like it was a forgotten thing. By the time you've got like an hour and 15 minutes into the film, it's like I'd completely forgotten he was even at the start, let alone thinking that he was going to turn up again.
And it's quite good because it draws a line on the wild time. So obviously, when he went through that image and into their underground dwelling, that's when they arrested him, I guess, and he'd been locked up ever since, effectively. So it was better. It would have been better he didn't go in there. But it's quite a good way to sort of draw the line under his story from the first film, actually, the way that the film ends as well. And again, this quite violent as well. The demise of both the astronauts and Nova. He gets shot in the corridor, of course, after they escape. And it's just, there's a lot of death. Well, there's a massive lot of death, it turns out, at the end of the film, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. And it ends really weirdly as well, because obviously the first one ends with that massive cliffhanger of him finding out he's on Earth, one of the biggest cliffhangers ever. And this one just ends.
Yeah.
He literally just cuts straight to the credits.
Yeah. You get that really... And it's actually a really ominous voiceover which tells you there was a green planet in the universe which is basically dead now. That's grim.
Yeah. And then it just finishes.
Yeah. Yeah, it just doesn't hang about. It doesn't actually stay to work. It's got 80-odd minutes, I think. It doesn't rattle along. And then, right, we're done now. You can go home.
Yeah, and after that very odd ending as well, or that odd portion of the film at the end with the cult and everything, and the lack of apes in the end section of it as well. We get that vision of the ape statue crying. And again, the fire effects and things like
that.
It's
really good, that sequence, actually.
Yeah, it is. That's the weird thing, that we just don't really see the apes.
No.
Towards the end of it, which...
No, there's very little, ironically, there's very little ape action, so to speak, throughout the film. I mentioned Zira earlier on. There's one or two bits and pieces, and we've got Zaius is back briefly as well, isn't he? But
yeah.
Yeah, there's not actually a lot of apes in it in terms of the plot, really.
No, not compared to the first one, certainly.
It's about him looking for Taylor and finding a bunch of weird occultists.
Yeah, just such a... And we've talked about some of the films that have come out of that era. We're talking The Omen, when we reviewed that, and there were some very strange turns in that. And ones we haven't talked about, The Exorcist, where they've been completely different. Look at Halloween. There's a whole film that's got absolutely nothing to do with the other films.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is one of those that is completely different to its first film. Other than a few returning things and kind of a B story that kind of ties in to what we saw in the first film. The bulk of this has really nothing to do with apes at all. And do you know what? It moved along at a decent pace. It's only an hour and 35 minutes, I think.
Something like that. Yeah, it doesn't hang about.
No, it certainly doesn't. And it doesn't outstay its welcome. Even through the weirdness, it's still a decent watch. And I think, obviously, if you are a Planet of the Apes fan, or in our case, I know you are, Tony, and I've watched these, I've seen them on and off over the years because my brother watched them. But you do have to watch it because, as you say, it does finish off a storyline.
Big
point. In Houston.
End of the pool.
I would definitely say it is worth a watch.
Yeah, the important thing for me, because the first film is a really good, clever, intelligent film, but it's not what you call a fun film.
No.
It's quite heavy at times. But the second one is just completely crazy and a lot of fun, I think. The second half of the film is just, what?
Yeah, definitely. It's very, very strange. But in a good way.
I
would say it's not one of those ones where you go, this is weird and I don't really want to be watching it.
Yeah.
This kind of still grabs you and goes, yeah, we're weird. We know we're weird.
We'll see where it's going.
Yeah. And we're going to take you along for the weird ride. So was there anything else you wanted to add before we wrap up, Tony?
No, I think just to say I do like it. I say it. Critically, it's not as accomplished as the first one, and it is a different beast. But it's just a proper, fun, anything goes sequel to a really well received first film.
Yeah.
And it doesn't care. That's what it is, and I credit them for it. Just going completely different direction with it.
And I think at this point we kind of have to give them their dues that they knocked these films out in 5 years.
Yes. Yeah.
All five films came out in 5 years, which is just mental. So the first one, 1968, this was 1970. The next one was 71. The one after that was 72, and the final one was 73. Just unbelievable. And we may have mocked them for their dodgy masks in this one, but the lead apes were still great. They still looked fantastic. There we go. Do we want to score this one?
Yeah. I think I scored the first one quite highly because I think it's a really clever film. But this one, because it's so much fun and it doesn't care that it's daft, I'm going to go, I think, 80%. I think it's just such a good, fun second film.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I can see why. I'm not going to go much lower. I'm going to give it a 75.
Yeah.
As I say, it's not a classic by any means, but it's a good
romp. First film franchise wouldn't have gone very far, I don't think.
Yeah, no, it certainly wouldn't have, because it doesn't sell what it says on the tin at all.
It kind of does, because a lot of the film beneath.
Yeah, it is. If it was called Beneath, I think it might have, but then that's a completely different film. Yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed it. As I say, I watched it on a Friday evening. Good Friday evening fodder after you finish work.
Absolutely.
Friday
night the pizza.
Yeah, so that wraps up our thoughts on the second Planet of the Apes film, Beneath the Planet of the Apes. We will be back next month with the third film in the franchise, Escape from the Planet of the Apes. There's going to be lots of Planet of the Apes talk across these, because that's literally, they're all called Planet of the Apes.
And they're all very, very different as well.
So thank you, Tony, for joining me.
No worries.
Looking forward to watching the next one now. And as I say, we will be back next month with our thoughts on Escape from the Planet of the Apes.